Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life radio show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, certified coach, and energy master, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and wellness in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to help you shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us on Power Your Life. And I'm Joanne White, and it's always a pleasure to be here. And I want you to think about something today, because we go through lots of different challenges in our lives, and oftentimes we can get through them unscathed, and oftentimes we don't even look back. But sometimes it's important to go through something, not something that you planned or that you even wanted, that actually has something to offer other people. And I have a very special guest today who's going to share a tragedy that's actually turning into something wonderful for others in terms of hope. And I'm talking about Kim Canton, who is an author, wife, and mother who lost her husband and her son in a crushing mudslide. And in her darkest time, after being separated from her entire family, Kim found the courage and the strength to carry on with her daughter, Lauren, who had also miraculously survived. Kim enjoyed beforehand a 20-year career in sales and marketing leadership in medical devices, working for a Fortune 500 company, and later Kim created her own successful marketing consulting firm and eventually worked as a senior director of marketing for Teleflex Urology. Despite Kim's devastating loss, she and her daughter were able to start their new life, fueled by love, faith, determination, unconventional support, and unexpected wisdom. Kim recounts this journey in her incredible memoir, Where Yellow Flowers Bloom. And through Kim's patience, perseverance, and her willingness to be open to help and to healing, Kim confirms the ability to connect and connect and transcend beyond life. Welcome, Kim Canton. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, and I don't know that a lot of people remember the mudslides of 2018, but can you go back a little bit? I know it's not a beautiful memory, but I think it helps our listeners understand where you are today and where you've come from.
Sure. So in December of 2017, there started what was then the largest wildfire in California. It was called the Thomas Fire, and it started in Ventura, California, and it started roaring north towards Santa Barbara and Montecito. And there were multiple evacuations. I know our family evacuated three times due to the fire. And they had on your phones, it almost was sounding like an Amber Alert. It would blast to tell you the status and if you needed to evacuate. It was called an aware and beware signal, and you would watch the news. And so that happened, and we evacuated three times. We got back, I think, to Santa Barbara on December 22nd, so it was the holiday that never happened for most of Montecito. Packages weren't delivered. Mailboxes were taped over. And we had a nice Christmas. We were thrilled our home was saved. We had to clean up all the ash and get the carpets to the cleaners. And then in early January, they were forecasting some heavy rain. And you got to remember that when the fire roared through the mountains that are above Santa Barbara, it took out all the big trees and the foliage. So what was left were car-sized boulders sometimes you'd see hanging precariously on the hillside. And there was houses up there near those boulders. And I remember thinking, gosh, I feel so bad for those houses up on the hill by the boulders. And I didn't feel bad for me because I was down in the village, kind of far, seemed far away.
Right.
And but nonetheless, we prepped the house for rain. I had a hotel room booked in case we needed to get out with heavy rain. We had the sandbags up. We had the drains cleared. And we weren't in the mandatory evacuation. So we went to bed on January 8th. And at about 3 in the morning, we awoke to very, very heavy rain, torrential rain. And so my husband quickly went to look around the house, and he says, we're taking in water in the detached garage. We yelled to the kids, get dressed, we're leaving, because we had cars staged outside to leave. And tragically enough, our family didn't get out before our house was obliterated by a 30-foot wave filled with 100-year-old downed trees, car-sized boulders, and mud that crashed down on our house and just obliterated it with my family in it. And when that happened, my husband washed away to his death. My son perished. He ended up being considered missing. The 23 people died that night, and two of them, a 2-year-old little girl, Lydia, and my 17-year-old son, Jack, were listed as missing. My daughter was washed away a football field distance and was buried alive under 20 feet of mud, part of a roof, two cars, an electrical transformer for 6 hours, 6 hours until her miraculous rescue that was shown around the world. She unbelievably had a little tiny pocket of air the size of half a volleyball in front of her face, not her belly button, not her kneecap, but her face, with a little tiny hole the size of a straw that allowed her to breathe. And she yelled and yelled and yelled, and through that muffling of all the in her entombment of 20 feet of mud, it was really hard for them to hear her, but they did. I washed away 2 football fields, and I ended up severely injured in an intersection wrapped in electrical wires.
Wow. How do you even get past that? What did you do to help you and your daughter heal and get to the other side of this horrific tragedy?
It's a good question. I did a lot in terms of just being open to things that I would need. They had different therapy groups. They had a group therapy session for the survivors of the mudslide. The hospital did. I did individual therapy. I did trauma therapy called EMDR, which is just tapping for PTSD. I fundamentally, I had a tribe of people around me that were so supportive and compassionate. The whole town of Santa Barbara was unbelievably compassionate. And so I think my anecdote in the whole situation were people. And I'm more naturally, it's interesting, even though I was in sales and marketing, I naturally have some introversion in my framework. So I get energy sometimes by being alone. And if I'm in big crowds, it drains my energy. And I kind of flipped after the mudslide where I knew I needed people and they were healing for me. And so I'd say people were my anecdote, being vulnerable and open to all the various supports that I needed, from, you know, trauma therapy to widows group, you know, all that stuff.
It's not easy. So when you were referred to an intuitive and a medium, so you had an initial response to that. What was the response and what happened after, Kim?
Well, I was in the hospital, and my friend Marcia told me something. She goes, I just sent your name to a renowned evidentiary medium, Suzanne Giesman, and because she was trying to get on her list to get a reading for herself. But Suzanne, I think, is booked for, like, the next 3 years. And she said, you know, can you get my friend on the list? She really needs your help. Her son's missing, and we want to see if we can find anything to find him. So she told me that in the hospital. I'm like, I'll try anything. You know, I didn't have much experience at all with mediums. I didn't have a negative perception. I just didn't have my life as a busy mom with 2 kids and a career and a husband didn't afford me time to do learning about all that stuff. So I had my first reading with Suzanne, and it was really, really helpful. And I think in my healing, other than people, the compassion and the different therapies, I had a couple mediums or intuitives who, you know, they never asked for a dime because they knew that there was a missing 2 missing children, so they were using their talents for good. And they helped me a lot, you know, in trying to get clues of where Jack could be. You know, it wasn't easy. It was a 30 square mile of mud and debris.
So they were helpful in finding him?
In clues, sure, yeah. We got clues, and we would mark any of the clues that the intuitives, we had a big map, and we marked the clues of areas that we could say that's kind of what the intuitive's describing, or something we found, like one of them was, you know, Superman, or Superman's important, so we put on the map where the Superman costume was found, or the Superman figurine was found. And then, you know, we'd mark where any of the Canton items were found, Dave's shorts, a spoon of ours, my nightgown, you know, all that stuff. And we would use them, and it kept what was so fascinating when I put blue dots and red dots. So say blue dots were any clues the intuitives gave us, and red dots were things that we found that were Canton. Could be my work papers, could be Jack's backpack. They overlapped the same area in a 30 square mile large area, and it clustered probably into about 100 yards.
Amazing. So how,
yeah,
how did
you... Really amazing.
Yeah. So here you are today. That was 2018, and it's a different time. What did you do personally for your journey to get to a place of feeling better about life, better about yourself, and be able to move forward?
You know what? It wasn't... Although I was very open and deliberate in going to different things to heal, right, the therapies and all that stuff, I just sat down during COVID to start writing the book. And what I didn't realize, Joanne, is that process of writing the book, because I wanted to write it for my future grandkids one day so that they heard the real story from me, and I had the facts before I forgot them. And
mm-hmm.
Lauren told her story, so the book also tells the firsthand story of Lauren being buried alive, which everyone saw her rescue, so people are, like, pretty interested in that one. I didn't realize as I was going through that until probably 70% of the way through it, going, this is pretty cathartic and really reflective. I saw in myself as I wrote it this, I started off in more desperate grief, right? And as I went through the whole process of the search, we searched for my son for 3 years, I had more of a peaceful acceptance, because what the intuitives would say, Jack would say, is, Mom, don't worry about finding me. It's just a shell. I'm not that piece of remains. I'm me. I'm in spirit, right? And I got mad when he'd say that. I'm like, dude, I need you found. I need you buried next to your father. And as we went through it, I could see in the book and we were doing the search, that I did get less attached to a specific outcome. And when you get less attached to a specific outcome of anything in life, right? If you say, I've got to go to see this movie today, and if I don't see this movie today, life's going to really be bad. Whatever. If you're so attached to any one thing, that leads to unhappiness. So I saw myself be less attached to a specific outcome and just be more present in the moment, and that's how it kind of occurred, is through the book. And now the book's out. I've been really surprised, actually, Joanne, of how that's shifted me, almost like a step function shift, into ready to move forward. You know, I grieved for 5 years because I had so much going on. I had to get a new house. I had to stabilize for Lauren. I had to learn to walk again. All that stuff. My grief was delayed for my husband. I was searching for my son for 3 years, and so I had to get through it all. And now through this book, I think that really helped me heal.
You know, I think sometimes that's so very important, being able to, and people do journaling, being able to write down their feelings and their fears and their grief and whatever. It's a way of releasing and coming to terms with that, Kim. So that's understandable. Now, you mentioned talking to Jack or hearing Jack. How did that come about?
Well, that was with the intuitives, right? They would do a reading, and it seemed like between Dave and Jack was much more communicative, and they would say, boy, Jack is an awesome communicator. Like, multiple would say, like, he communicates really well. And I think he was really trying. He was really, he knew, you know, I think they probably knew how much I needed Jack found. It was just such a, I can't tell you how heart-wrenching it is to have not only your firstborn or your child killed, right, suddenly, tragically, traumatically, but then not to find his body so you could have some closure and to think he could be in a debris pile or hauled away by one of the trucks hauling away the dirt. It was pain beyond any imagination. And so I think if he could, I think he did, I think he tried to help as much as he could with clues or, you know, accessing the different mediums I was using.
You know, after a certain time, I think that the police stopped looking for bodies or giving up or whatever. So how did that search for Jack continue for 3 years?
Well, I realized, you know, they had, I think, 2,000 search dog hours, and I think it was after Super Bowl Sunday 2018. I think they kind of, you know, they considered it still an open missing case, but they kind of said, we're done looking, right? And they just made assume, hey, they probably went to the ocean. And I knew he didn't go to the ocean. It was a low tide. It didn't make sense because Lauren, Jack, the dog, and I were all in the house. And Lauren, the dog, and I went only maximum 200 yards. Dave went a mile and a half, but he was outside the house. Jack was in the house. So Jack had to be closer. Just logically, he had to be closer. So once I realized that there wasn't much of anything going on, I just said, then I'm leading the search. And there was a house that came down. So many houses were damaged, I think over 400, something like that. One house that had a sub, not a basement, but an under area that they couldn't get to right away. It was too wet and dangerous for the dogs. You know, we had the dogs go there, and they took down the house. And I overheard many of the handlers saying, oh, we couldn't search that pile. It was too wet and dangerous for the dogs. Oh, we didn't get to that pile either. And so when they were saying, oh, no, we searched everything, I heard clearly they didn't, because at the time it was too dangerous for the dogs. Right. And then when I was out on the search, I had a course search team, about five people. We found many areas that had never been searched. Property owners saying, yeah, we hauled away 18 truckloads and dogs never searched the area and we didn't have it spotted. Or another one with over 30 truckloads, never had dogs run it, never spotted. So, you know, a pit goes to the bottom of your stomach when that happens, and you're like, oh, my God. But we had a core group of about five of us, a general contractor, an intuitive, a couple neighbors, one of the dads in my husband's scout troop. He would always come out. So it was a really – and a search dog handler, and his dog, MacGyver, would come out all the time, and a couple search dog handlers would come out. So I was point person leading it until a detective friend told me, hey, you know, you need to get an anthropology team involved. You could be looking for really small things now, not a six-foot-tall male. And so we got a professor from the University of California, Santa Barbara, top 10 in anthropology as a research institution. And she was kind, compassionate, and professional. And they worked for about 18 months, her and some student volunteers, looking for baby Lydia and Jack.
Wow, amazing. So you talked about the writing process, which was a form of healing for you. And many people go through loss, and sometimes over the last few years that's been increased for a lot of people. What do you want them to know? What's important for people to know that have been through it or even going through it now, Kim, and being on the other side of it?
Okay, I would probably tell them, first of all, when going through hell, keep going. And just keep putting one foot in front of another. Be vulnerable and open, because I think different angels will show up in your life, meaning people I didn't know showed up in my life that absolutely made a huge difference for me. My sacred search team did. And it will get lighter It will get lighter. Get yourself as much help as you can. It will get lighter over time. It's not going to go away. You learn to, you never get closure. You get more integration and adaptation. I'm learning to live alongside it with, you know, you still miss them. I mean, you know, but you're fill your life with other new experiences, and there's, you know, other experiences in life to live. And so, and grief, look, we all don't get out of this place alive, right? And so we all of us, if we've loved, it's a part of the human condition, we're going to face grief. It matters just when. And then you got to live alongside it.
Yeah, and that's so very true, because we do face different kinds of grief, and it's important to get to that place that you can get through it, like you said, just keep going through it, which is important, and be able to come to hopefully some place of peace. Now, you said your daughter was buried alive and for days wasn't found. How is Lauren?
She wasn't dazed, thank God, or she wouldn't have survived. She was buried alive for 6 hours, and she was fully conscious, and her body was kind of in a bent-over position, almost like a starfish. But she yelled and yelled and yelled, and when she heard some of the rescuers, she heard them talking, she just yelled as loud as she could. So she got rescued, and, you know, she's been... You know, she did a lot of singing for her healing. She likes to sing, and that makes her feet feel on the ground, so that was good for her. It was really good for the community because everyone saw her come out of her entombment, and for them to see her sing at a fundraiser just touched people's hearts and made them know she'll be okay. I mean, we hope she'll be okay. She's got a lot of trauma.
I hope she still does singing.
I do, too. I do, too. Yeah, it's her thing. It's not my thing. You don't want me singing, but she's great at it.
So you've been through a lot in terms of discouragement and the grief and also the prolonged finding the remains of Jack. So how did you get through that? How are you able to get to a place of, you know, many people are very impatient, especially I'm seeing that so much now, and they may not be going through what you've endured, Kim. What are some valuable things for you, that you use, that people can use in terms of feeling a sense of patience and perseverance to plow through?
Well, that was the hardest thing for me. I'm not a, you know, I'm typically a, you know, fast-paced, get it done yesterday kind of person. I was forced to, right? I couldn't make the search go any faster. And so I had to just kind of let go and let God. And actually it was the nun at my church, and she kept saying, she goes, all in God's time, God's time is the right time. And I got mad at her for saying that, because I'm like, I want him found now, or I want to get through this grief now. But I think she was right. It took us 3 years to find Jack, and if I had been told in the hospital, Joanne, that we just found pieces of him and not the whole body, I would have been probably in the fetal position, right? Through the process of searching was healing for me, the trying, knowing that Jack knew I tried. By the time we got to the point where we just found pieces, I was a little bit more okay with that. So what did I do? I think it's just being open and vulnerable. Be open. Look, when you have a major trauma or tragedy or grief, it's like peeling an onion. And I think we're all supposed to have the layers of our onion peeled in this life and move more toward love. And so just be open to that. It's going to feel uncomfortable, right, because it's this new place you don't want to be. But just trust the process. I think it's trust the process. And knowing it will get lighter, trust the process.
Which is not always easy, as you say, Kim, to do, but it's really important. Now, you mentioned the nun who told you about the patients, and how did your spiritual beliefs and faith help you?
Oh, they helped me. I'm so grateful. I came into the mudslide with strong faith. I mean, when it happens, I when I woke up on that debris pile, well, when it started roaring in, I'm like, I'm going to die tonight. And then I'm like, Jesus, save me, because I'm Christian. And then when I was on the debris pile and I woke up, I thought I was in a war zone. I didn't know where I was, if I was in heaven, I didn't know. And I just said the Lord's Prayer. It was soothing for me. It comforted my terrified soul. I felt I was fortunate to know, I believe in a higher power, whatever higher power, people believe in. For me, it was very soothing. And then through the work with the intuitives and mediums, I got really, really clear, more spiritually clear, that we are more than our physical bodies, that our souls go on, I believe, to live in a different dimension that our human eyes can't see. But I personally believe my husband and son, like many others that pass away, the souls go on in pure joy. I just can't see them. So I'm much more spiritual, much more open. Still have a strong faith. Some people get really angry with God when something happens and getting mad, and I never blamed God for this. I don't think he caused this, and I never had that reaction. I had this paradox, right? Or I knew for sure that Lauren and I survived the unimaginable. We were swimming with car-sized boulders, downed electrical live wires, broken glass from all the windows in people's homes, right? There's no reason why Lauren and I should be alive. And so we survived. So there was like, thank you very much for all the angels or whomever helped in saving us, right? And then juxtaposed against the traumatic grief of losing my husband, my son, and my dog, and the house. I mean, the whole kit and caboodle.
I'm with you. I also believe that the soul lives on, and have worked with people who, like you, have gotten messages from the other side, which is really important. So how do you keep it going in terms of the connection to your husband and to Jack and even your dog? Do you celebrate that? What do you do? How do you connect? Do you connect?
No, not that. I don't do, I don't do intuitive readings much anymore. I don't feel I need them as much. I do get a sense I feel them sometimes, or just little, I was visiting my parents, on the East Coast, and just get there and a couple cardinals zoop on in, and the cardinal's kind of, I think, symbolic of someone who's passed. When I'm in my regular home, there's two birds that seem to always sit on this electrical wire and peer into my master bedroom, so I see it with birds. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of get the sense, or just little things where my husband drove a white Silverado Chevy truck, and he loved that truck because he used it for scouts and everything. And so when I see a white truck, I just smile. And just think of him, So you just, or like what I've done is, like, in my home, my son loved the color orange. So on some of the accents I have, I use like white plates in my kitchen and white and gray. And then I got like an orange, a really pretty orange salt and pepper shaker, right? Like, so I just add a little accents of orange, which is kind of an ode to my son. My husband really liked blue and yellow, so I got... I lost everything. Like, I had nothing. I had to like get a whole new house and toilet bowl plunger and hammer and nails and mattress, all that stuff. So I got a little bistro table that has beautiful yellow and blue. And then miraculously, a couple pieces of Dave's artwork from high school that were in a zipped leather folio that was in our attic. Someone found them, and they were unscathed, and they were beautiful chalk drawings. And so I said, these are beautiful, you know, that was on like a canvas paper and then black chalk. And they were really stunning, three pictures. So I took them to the framer and I said, frame these up and they're going to be my artwork on my walls. So I do that. I try to honor them with things that maybe remind me of them or, you know, when I see the color orange. Orange is big for me for Jack.
And, you know, that's so important because we do have people who passed on, and to do what you've done in terms of the colors in a way of honoring and celebrating your connection to them and them in your life, and I think that's so beautiful and important. So this is a hard question, I think, but through challenge and through tragedy like you've experienced, is there a gift? That may not be something that people know immediately when they're going through something, but can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, a gift like a silver lining, I think a silver lining or gift for me through this process, which I hope any future lessons God wants me to do or come painlessly, because this was painful.
Right.
I think I'm more spiritual. I think I'm more empathetic. I'm more vulnerable. I don't have as many maybe emotional walls up because I'm like, I almost died. I don't care. I don't care. Life's too short, right? Life's too short. It's about people. It's about loving people. That's what it's about. So that's a silver lining. A major silver lining is I got to see the best of humanity. I mean, how the people in Santa Barbara and Montecito rallied to help the survivors, and my daughter and I was bar none. And it wasn't just the grief tourists that come in for the first 2 weeks. These people, I mean, I'm my sacred search team that stayed with me for over 3 years.
Wow.
Who does that? Who stays and goes out with me almost every other week for 3 years? I'm like, can we just try this one area again? And they're like, sure. And then one of the gals, Ann, said to Sherry, because we couldn't see as many piles anymore, we'd gone through it after so many years, she goes, when will we know we're done here? Because they looked around like we're not seeing much. And
right.
One of them said to the other, when Kim tells us we're done. And so that
wow.
was a huge gift of grief. It's not when, it's when the person's done. Like people try to say, get over it. It's been a year. It's been 2 years. Get over it. The best gift you can give someone in grief is
let them
to be there on their time, right? It's all, everyone's grief journey is different, and for different reasons, it's going to take different times.
You know, that's so very important. I worked with someone years ago who had lost her mother and father very close together, and her friends were saying, okay, it's time. And she said, Joanne, I'm not ready. I wish people would not tell me to stop grieving because I can't. And that's so important to allow people the time that they need to grieve and to get through it.
Yeah.
That's very important. And like you said too, Kim, to be there for them, which is a beautiful way of supporting and caring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just holding the space and just to hold it with them and just go, you know, I feel for you. And just you don't have to do much other than that. I feel for you. What do you need? That's usually enough for someone in grief.
That's true. So this book, let's talk a little bit about the book and what's the significance of this? I love the title, but what's the significance behind it, Where Yellow Flowers Bloom?
Yeah, so the book is Where Yellow Flowers Bloom, and my daughter helped come up with the name. I credit her for it. But when the university ultimately found some of the bones that we believe are Jack's, you know, all these piles of mud, right? They were filled with all the toxins from these 450 homes that were destroyed. And so all the stuff in their garage, their paints, their paint thinners, their insecticides, their flea dip, all that stuff, right? Insulation. So there's arsenic. What they called it was a chemical soup. There's arsenic in the soil. And the thought was nothing should really grow in there because it's such a toxic soup. But the pile where some of the remains of Jack were found were covered and graced with beautiful yellow wildflowers. And so one of the university students who found the bones, she clipped some of the yellow wildflowers and she drove it over to my house and put them in a vase. And she said, life found a way. And I said, love found a way.
Beautiful. And love did find a way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. So tell our listeners, Kim Canton, how they can get this book, Where Yellow Flowers Bloom, find out more about your journey and also Lauren's journey, and help themselves heal if they need to.
Sure. So it's on Amazon, Where Yellow Flowers Bloom, and people have said who've read it that's really helped them either get access to their grief or shift them and kind of how they're looking more hopefully, which that's my goal, right? I wrote this book. It healed me, and I hope it helps others. Even people who didn't go through grief but are just kind of in maybe a different phase of their life where they're just kind of feeling in a funk, they said it gave them some more hope. And then I have a website, kimcanton.com, and Canton is C-A-N-T-I-N, like a tin can, so kimcanton.com. It has all the information of, you know, where you can get the book, but, you know, it's in some bookstores in Santa Barbara and such. But right now, you know, it's on Amazon.
And it's beautiful. It really is.
Thank you.
Really important. So what would you like to leave our listeners with? You've shared a lot of your journey and all the tragedy and the hope and all the support that you got that really helped you through. What would you like our listeners to know before we close?
That helping others makes a difference. I mean, the help that Lauren and I received and the other survivors, I think, was instrumental in our healing. So when you can help another, even with a smile or just an act of kindness, it makes a difference. So keep doing it. That's what I'd say.
Beautiful. And I totally agree with you. I think it's so important to reach out to people and be there like others were for you. And again, like you are for other people through this book and through your talks on shows and whatever, helping people heal and get past their grief to another place. So thank you so much. I appreciate you and all that you do and been through, and have a beautiful day.
You too. Thanks a lot. Thanks a ton.
My pleasure. So think about everything that Kim shared today, because it's so important to recognize that despite the challenges, the grief, whatever you've been through, there is a way through it. There is a way, and Kim said, to be able to just keep going, to persevere, to move on, and to not give up. And she didn't give up 3 years to be able to find Jack's remains and get to a place of peace. It's really important to recognize that you need to have that sense of love, that faith, whatever kind of faith you have, and just be able to move forward. And also, in terms of grief, and I think this is really important, and Kim touched on this today too, is you may need to take your time, and people may not understand that you need longer than what they expect, but they need to know that and be there for people. Even when you are going through something, there's a gift of, and Kim also talked about that too, the gift of kindness from other people and being there and caring that really helped both her and Lauren get through it. So remember that you have the ability to empower yourself regardless of what you're through, and even if you just have to take one step at a time. So take a step today, a little forward step in the direction of your empowerment, feeling good about you, and remember that every step counts. Have a beautiful and blessed day, and thanks so much for being here with us.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with host and author Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the upbeat show to enrich you and grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again and visit docwhite.org for more information and find out how Dr. Joanne can benefit you. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.